Radio.
Your momentum is a switch, not a dial. People don't get the nuance of using momentum and that you can be using it on things where it's small holds, or you can be using it more on dead points, or are you actually driving from your hips in a lot of your moves or not?
Hey y'all, I'm Ryan Devlin, and welcome to this month's Struggle Climbing Show Coach Chat, where I connect with elite climbing coaches to talk through my personal training goals and struggles, answer listener questions, and dive into training topics that are going to help you as you navigate your own training and climbing goals. Now today we're getting some good spray from Coach Lauren Abernathy of Good Spray Climbing, as well as co-host of the Average Climber podcast. Now I've known Lauren for a couple of years now. I've been a fan of her podcast that she does with Caitlin Holmes, and also just for the fantastic, thought-provoking, and really entertaining climbing content that Lauren puts out on Instagram and through her newsletter. Since launching her coaching company about 5 years ago, Lauren has coached over 150 climbers ranging from beginners to V double digit and 514 climbers. She's a certified personal trainer, a certified kettlebell coach, and a multi-sport athlete. Today's Coach Chat is just packed with insights, tips, and tricks that I know will have a positive impact on your training and climbing, and also just your life. We start with a look at how my project is going, and then we dovetail into some really applicable skills and drills that we can all use to improve our movement on the wall. And then we wrap things up with a really interesting look at what it means to be a multi-sport athlete and how we can layer our climbing training in with our other activities in an effective and efficient way. So if you climb but also do other sports, you're really going to want to check that section out. There's just so much good stuff in this one. This episode is supported by Fizzy Vantage, the official climbing nutrition sponsor of The Struggle. And let me tell you guys why I love Fizzy Vantage. Yes, their stuff is the best of the best when it comes to supporting my goals as a climber. But beyond that, y'all, I just love that this company was created by climbers for climbers and is an active member in the climbing community. Fizzy Vantage founder and legendary coach Eric Hurst, who's been on the show a million times with me here, he's been giving back to our community as an author, a route developer, and a coach for decades now. And he created Fizzy Vantage to bring the best science-backed nutrition to our sport so that we can all perform at our best. And when I see crushers like Alex Magos, Daniel Woods, Amity Warm, Jonathan Segrist, Natalia Grossman, and so many more using Fizzy Vantage every day, well, that is a pretty damn good endorsement. And speaking personally, I'm training harder than I ever have, and I have never felt better, you guys. I use their supercharged collagen and their PowerPlex protein every single day to support my training and my recovery. It is crazy delicious, and most importantly, it works. Plus, Eric is hooking y'all up with a sick deal just for listening to The Struggle here. You can hit that link in your podcast app or use checkout code STRUGGLE15 to save 15% off any full-price nutrition order over at fizzyvantage.com. All right, let's get into some good spray now with Coach Lauren Abernathy.
It is. I always dress in layers for podcasting because Do you ever get really sweaty when you podcast?
Actually, I have the opposite problem. I'm in my basement and it is like always freezing down here. So I'm like, I've got my tea, I've got a space heater, I've got two dogs laying on my feet, I've got one dog for each foot.
There you go. I have a set of three blankets for my office, but the only thing, I think I just get nervous when I like record, and then, well, not for Average Climber, but here we are on The Struggle. So yeah, I don't know. Or my body doesn't regulate heat very well. Like it's like ski touring where you're like, somehow I'm sweating, but my toes are numb. That's cool. We could distribute that better, I guess, but here we are.
Right. I like that metaphor though. Like being a guest on a podcast is like ski touring.
We'll start
so
there.
We'll just check our heart rates and we'll make sure to hydrate and we'll have fun and we'll screw around and I edit it all, or maybe I won't edit it all. Maybe I won't edit anything and we'll just leave all of this, even the dad jokes and all this garbage that's happening right now.
That's perfect. We'll I like that you start recording. Caitlin and I usually like tete-a-tete before we start recording. And I'm like, we should probably just start doing that. It's good B-roll or something.
There could be like gold that happens in this just garbagey intro.
Yeah. Exactly. No, that's a very good point. I was just watching. I was like going through all of your videos on the force.
I'm so sorry that you had to watch all of my climbing.
Oh,
videos.
No, it's great. I was like going through all of them to get hyped. And yeah, it's really funny how people on the internet think that you want their advice all the time. I'm like, I like people that are like, change your project. And I'm like, who are you? Oh, yes, this random man on the internet told me to change my project. Let me just do that really fast. You're so right, Craig 8788897. Thank you for your feedback. It's very strange.
Yeah. Everyone's a critic.
Yeah, I'm like, leave Ryan alone. That dino is so fun. It's such a cool route and great choice. That, yeah, that opening boulder, I tried it on one very tired day at the Red, and I was like, this is hard.
It's really hard. And I mean, first of all, thank you, Craig 87654, because, you know, I've listened and I've given up on everything. And now I just climb V0s at the gym. Yeah, it is funny how, I don't know, somebody made a post recently. I think it was Useful Coach. Who's that? Useful
Tom
Coach.
Herbert.
Tom Herbert. It was like, unless somebody is specifically asking for some input when they post something, they're not looking for input when they post something. They're probably looking for some validation, but they're definitely not looking for some input.
Yes. Yes. I did a post a while back where I explained, like, hey, good coaches know that the art of giving feedback is absolutely an art. So anyone randomly like spewing some shit at you is probably not like, first of all, they haven't learned that there's an art to giving feedback. And then if they haven't learned that, they probably aren't a very good coach and maybe you shouldn't listen to them. So yeah, it's kind of funny how that works. Yeah.
Well, that's, you know, part of the joy / regret of making my climbing goal so public is that I've basically opened myself up for, on the good side, fortunately, a ton of amazing support. And I actually have gotten some really good beta. Like Chris Hampton's a perfect example where he's climbed the Force.
Probably
like
an up, down, up on it.
Like he used warm up on it to do like swing running. Right, exactly. So that's great because then he'll like, you know, I'll send him a video or he'll see something that I post and he'll be like, hey, have you thought about this? And of course, he's a professional coach. So he's very thoughtful about how he will
deliver,
you know,
feedback,
portray some advice, or mostly he does it through asking questions and these kinds of things, which is great. But like, then also it's, you know, public in kind of these more like pressure filled ways where I'm like, oh, am I progressing? And should I post about it? And then, yeah, some troll is like, oh, you should pick a different thing. And you know, I mean, it's fine because like I'm doing a podcast and I put it out there for a reason to be open with the process. Like I didn't expect it to be just like this easy thing. But, you know, it's kind of a double edged sword when you put it out there like that and you get a lot of comments. But I have learned for myself that, you know, when I see other people post things and I might have the urge to say, like, have you tried a drop knee or like, you know, I don't know, just like something snarky because my freaking self-esteem is low that day or whatever. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not going to say anything because
person
doesn't want to hear my thoughts on how they're doing.
These are inside thoughts. I know. I do that at the climbing gym all the time. The people don't understand. So I have like a full-on kettlebell certification and I had a just phase of kettlebell Lauren where I was like getting the certification and I had to be technically perfect on all these different kettlebell moves and pass this like very intense endurance test that was extremely voluminous to train for. And the amount of restraint I show at the gym when people are doing these floppy wild kettlebell swings where I'm like, hold it in. And it's so bad. And I'm like, would this person be psyched if I went up to them? And I was like, hello, I am a certified kettlebell coach. Would you like some feedback on your kettlebell swing when they don't know me? I'm like, it could go one of two ways and it would be an extreme either way. And I just hold it in.
Now I'm going to post some videos of me doing kettlebell swings now, and I will just open myself up for ridicule. So I'm excited about this. I recognize your voice from a podcast that you do.
Oh, do tell. That is fun. Shall I tell everyone?
I will do that later. But I have been listening to some Average Climbers. I mean, I listen, you know, regularly, but, you know, in anticipation of us talking. And what's really cool is that, you know, recently on Average Climber, as well as like on your Instagram with your coaching that you do, you've been talking a lot about movement. And it's something that I wanted to focus on today as kind of maybe one of our main focuses on this coach chat. We can kind of look through the lens of me working on the Force, but also just in general, like I want to go out and try to flash some things or on-site some things and stuff that you're working on. And I think movement is this area that, is sometimes hard to talk about because it's so visual. Mm-hmm. Like, it's easier to talk about finger training.
Yeah.
But I feel like perhaps one of the things that might be holding me back in the biggest way on my project right now are maybe some inefficiencies caused by, you know, probably some things that could be addressed with movement, because I just keep falling like very close to the top. And I think there's some tactics in there as well. But yeah, I'd love to like just dive into a little bit of a movement sandwich here, and then we can bring up anything else that might be on your mind, because I appreciate you taking a look at some of my climbing films and that kind of thing. But I want this to be applicable to listeners as well. So let's, you know, we can kind of look at me, but let's look at things in general, since you're a very successful coach and Red River Gorge climber, and it'll be fun just to dive in.
Well, it sounds so fun. I'm so excited to be here. And yeah, it's been really fun. I feel like as I've gotten better at coaching and gotten to coach more people and just gotten, honestly, the reps in of, it's so funny, like funny and also a lot. All of my athletes have figured out that getting movement review from me is extremely helpful. And now I swear to God, I probably spend 4 hours a week, like coffee in hand, looking at my computer, like squinting at people's climbing videos and then recording me giving feedback. So I feel like it's been really fun to like leverage that to just, and then when I'm with my friends, like trying to be normal, I'm like, hey, turn your left foot a little, it'll fix it. And then I like watch it fix it. And I'm like, yes, I love coaching movement. It's so fun. So yeah, it's been a real blast, like digging into that side of coaching with all my one-on-one athletes. So I'm very psyched on it. Yeah. And I think it's been like, at least for me, throughout the winter, I've been like a lot more focused on skiing. So it's kind of like, and we can talk about that later. But like, for me, focusing on my climbing movement, like throughout, I think I remember listening to your like Tom Randall episode and just being like, the holidays are a barrage of chaos. And like, when is training happening? And you're trying to wrap things up and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, at minimum, I can get to the gym one time a week and try to climb really well and actually be focused. And if that's all I'm doing, like, that's a good thing for me and my climbing. I've also spent a lot of years like putting in the time for like building strength and all of that. So I feel like I'm in the, feel like, you know, the Chris Hampton, the old stronger, better paradigm. So I feel like now I'm in the like better phase, but I'm also focusing on that with my athletes a lot too, which has been super fun.
Well, let's do it. I mean, let's talk about it. We can do a little bit of a kind of overview of where I'm at with my kind of Red River Gorge season now.
Yes.
We're moving into spring. Like,
yeah,
thanks,
it's happening.
Climate change. I don't know. It seems a little soon, but here we are. And
yep.
I don't know. It was like 70 degrees like the other day. It was like mid-February and 70 degrees. So as is always the case with spring, as the time goes on, the conditions get worse. You know, like in the fall, as time goes on, conditions get better. Spring is a little, you know, tough here, especially at the Red, because the hot, muggy days will be here before we know it. The good news is, I mean, double-edged sword, like the bad news is I didn't put down the project last fall. The good news is I'm closer than I've ever been on it. And I think with
already?
A little bit of focused training and getting the right days out there and hopefully, you know, tweaking like a little bit of my movement or my tactics, I should have some good opportunities. So you took a look at the videos. I'm curious just like what your thoughts are, and then we can dive into like maybe kind of movement as a topic and also how we can maybe train it up when we're not out on the project.
Yep. Okay. So I would actually, so a couple of things I took notes on as I was like watching videos, and obviously I wish you could have an Andra caliber film crew at the top, because that's the trouble with sport climbing. It's like the parts where we're falling, especially when we're tall, you're like, oh, perfect. I can't totally see what's happening up there. But overall, I think one, just really good job mastering that dyno. It probably, you know, maybe the first time you ever worked it, it was hard and you were like, oh my god, doing this in isolation feels bonkers, and now you're probably like nailing it every time or like close to every time, which is a really fun progression, I'm sure. So really good work on that. I also think something that you do really well, and something that I feel like the Red River, it's like if you don't do this in the Red, you're gonna like, if you're only a squared up rock climber, like hips open all the time climber in the Red, you're gonna just lose so much efficiency. And I do think you do such a good job with getting twisty with the drop knees, and also leveraging how getting twisty and drop kneeing can support you on getting more out of rests as well, which I think is really awesome. So those are some of the good things I noticed. I actually wanted to ask you, so tell me what's happening. What do you feel like is happening when you're, and is it like one move that you keep falling at, or is it like a general sequence of more like sustained pump crux? And yeah, tell me what's going on at the top.
It's definitely the top now, which is the good news is, because it used to be the bottom. The hardest moves on the route are kind of those first four bolts.
Yep.
And it used to be like max effort to get through the pocket band section, and then you get to a really good rest, and then there's this maybe V5, V6 or something, I don't know, in there, boulder problem that now is, I almost do it every time. And like the last time I was out, which was just like a week and a half ago, those moves felt like almost chill. I actually did it in a slightly different way than I'd done it before, where I threw a drop knee and I just was I was very static with it. So I think like over the winter, I did some moonboard, like a heavy moonboard phase, your toxic boyfriend.
Yes, everyone really liked that.
Very good. I think like the moonboard is all of our toxic boyfriend.
It's everyone's toxic boyfriend, of course. Like the kilter board is your like nice, your like nice golden retriever boyfriend. And then the moonboard is your toxic boyfriend.
Very, very toxic relationship with me as well. But you know, it was worth it because like all of those individual moves felt the best they've ever felt. It was all very in control. So yay for kind of a power strength phase. But then I guess kind of predictably, the endurance tank was much lower because I hadn't been training. I hadn't been out on the route. I hadn't been training much endurance over the holidays. I was doing a lot of moonboarding. So putting all of it together was hard. Mm-hmm. I wasn't recovering as well. There's a couple like pretty decent rests in the middle of the route there. And I just wasn't kind of getting it back like I had been at the end of the fall. But to jump ahead to kind of like the top, like where I'm falling consistently, it's around the same spot. I get up to the last clip, I clip it, I get some shakes. It's a marginal rest. And then it punches into a sequence of maybe six moves or something like that. It's not that many to the chains. They're all long. And the angle kicks back and they're on kind of bad, like two finger and three finger pockets. And so I think like my hips are kind of coming away. Like I'm like just fatigued. Like my hips are coming away and it's harder to do those lock off long reaches because like it's hard to lock off at that point in time. Like, and then it's just those last like six moves or whatever it is are just kind of a mess, to be honest.
Oh, that's so hard. And it's also just like, oh, that's so weird that the part where you have to climb the bottom to get to the top sequence is the part that feels better and more rehearsed, right? It's, you know, and there's no way to just stick clip up past everything to get to working those top moves, especially on a longer route. So that totally, you know, logically, it makes sense. You're like, that's so weird that the final bit is the part that feels the least like solid. And of course, you're tired for it too. Okay, so it sounds like you mentioned not being 100% on the sequence. Do you feel like there's like still experimentation that you need to do, or does it feel more like you like know your beta, but you're so fatigued by the time you get there that you're almost like forgetting it or rushing through it?
I've done it.
Yes.
And I have linked a few bolts to the chains. So, you know, it's not that I get up there and I hang and and then like I come off or I just go to the chain. So I have done it in the way that I think is probably the way. But sometimes I'm like laying in bed and I'm like, oh, what if I tried to skip that hold and went to something? Like, I haven't done a lot of experimenting, I guess, to answer your question. I think the way that I'm doing it feels probably like it's the way to go. But I also haven't spent a whole lot of time just messing around.
No. Okay. So, audience, as you're listening to this, know that I have not seen exactly what's going on at the top. But I am going to give you some thoughts, Ryan, and I also think some of these thoughts will be applicable to all. Okay, so my first thought, I would definitely play with how much momentum you can add to certain moves to make it easier. I think a lot of the times when climbers think, you know, you say the word momentum and everyone's like, dyno, or like big dead point to a jug. And it's yes, and also there's more intricate forms of momentum, right? So I really like the analogy of thinking of momentum as a dial where you want to find like the Goldilocks amount. If all of us used the exact perfect amount of momentum for each move, every move would be like as easy as possible and like no harder, right? Because obviously when we do a move where we like completely lock off and then reach, that's extremely hard, extremely slow, lots of time under tension. But sometimes the move is so precise and the end position that we need to be in is so precise that doing it mega slow locked off is what we have to do, right? But for most moves, there's some kind of in between. And then obviously for a gigantic paddle run across the wall, wild ass dino, then yeah, okay, the answer is we're going to need a lot of momentum to get to that. That's like the other extreme, right? So it sounds to me like there's probably somewhere in between for all of these moves where you could potentially play with this momentum dial a little bit to try to figure out exactly how much momentum you can use to get to the hold and like land on it properly and not miss it, but also, you know, make it a little bit easier so that you can make it through the sequence faster. So that's one thing I would look at. The other, I would call this ironic piece of advice that almost feels like counterintuitive to the let's get the fuck out of these holds as fast as we possibly can sort of piece of the puzzle is like, sometimes we want to do more foot movements, which especially because you, and the reason I'm saying this is because you mentioned feeling like you're stretched out. So one drill that I've been, look at me looping a drill casually into this conversation, but one drill I've been really loving giving my athletes,
yes,
is this three, it's called the three-step drill. And actually in the Climbstrong drills manual, they have it as a five-step drill, which feels really brutal to me and rude. But I think if you were really going for it, you could. But essentially for every hand move you do, you have to make at least three foot movements and then find like a really good position so that the next hand move you make feels better and more chill. Right. So I think that's something you could play with too, where it's if you feel like all of these moves, you're like, oh, I'm locking off and oh, it's far away and all of these things. It might be that even though you would have to spend more time on the holds, if you repositioned your feet to make the next move easier or just get more weight off your hands and get into a better position, you might not have to be dead pointing as much. It might be a case where like maybe you get scrunched for a second, but then all of a sudden, you know, you move your hand and you're already in a great position to do that again. So that's another thing I would play with is, I mean, if you're, sounds like you're very close to sending, so I don't want you in, you know, screw around mode too much, but it could be fun maybe on like a warm-up go to try to do the three-step drill between these moves just to see, almost as a rule of thumb to a heuristic to experiment with what foot positions you could get into in this sequence. And maybe that will help you unlock some different beta by just giving yourself this arbitrary rule of do three steps between each move and see if that helps you unlock any new positions or any new beta that actually makes it easier. So those are my two like technique yeah. branches that I would investigate cool. for this sequence.
I like those, both of those. And, you know, what I've been doing lately is like going out there and kind of as the warm up, as mm-hmm. the last step of the warm up, doing like a little bit of a bolt to bolt and for brushing sure. and that kind of thing. So I could definitely get up there and just play around with it. And I think both of those are viable. I mean, they're essentially opposite ends of the coin, you know, try to mm-hmm. maybe make it less moves, a little bit more dynamic, try to flow through it or sacrifice like a couple more moves, but to ultimately get better positions so they're not as long and not as stretched out. I mean, I think either of those could work. And I think I will play around with that. In fact, the next time I go out there, I've decided that I'm going to kind of take like red pointing off. Like I'm going to relieve myself of the
yeah.
pressure or the potential to send by just saying this is just going to be a no send day. And I want to go and do some mm-hmm. low points. And as part of that, I think having a goal of maybe trying to lock in that beta could be very smart because right now I'm getting up to that rest and then I'm thinking, right? Okay, let's think about this. Which way do Ooh. I want to try this? And like,
no, no thinking. You want to be like, I know my shit and now I am going. Yeah, for sure. I think that'll, and also rolling up to that section with the confidence that you have played around and found a really good sequence will also make that rest. Yeah, turning from what to play with today into I know what's happening and I am laser focused and now I will execute will be like a really major shift. So, I have one more like tactical thought to think about maybe for your no send day or if you make this like a couple of no send day kind of situations. So this is something that I did on my project in Lander a lot, just because, well, actually it's like a 20 move, just super hard boulder that they call 13A. And that's like what's going on. We both were just like, what if we picked something really hard as our first 13A? But yeah, that's what I did too. Yeah.
Totally.
So for mine, basically, like, I was getting to this high point, but what I really wanted to be able to do is know that even if I got to like the last crux move super tired, I would still be able to do it well. I would absolutely rampage wreck myself, like put the last bolt in and then do four laps in a row on this crux sequence until I just felt terrible, honestly. Like, I would just lap it and go and be like, perfect, I am officially destroyed. Let's drive back to Utah. And like, that's how I would finish it out. But I just think that was really one, it just, you know, helps you kind of do a little bit of training on the route when you know you're not sending, but might as well just fully work myself and also get some more practice on that. So that could be something that you could play with too. Like, just make it a rule of thumb that if it, you know, unless you're like, okay, I'm going to not dig a hole because I'm going to take one rest day and come back kind of thing. But if you have 2 or 3 days before you get back on it again and you have some leeway to just absolutely dig yourself a nice little hole, like maybe the last couple bolts, or like do that section over and over and over again until you're like, I know it perfectly and I am going to puke and my forearms feel very bad. So that's another fun thing that I've done on projects. I don't know if you've played with that yet, especially because you're like, yours was 40 feet and mine's not. How long is the forest? The forest is like 90 feet, right? Like it's very long.
It's I think it's like 80 feet and it's, you know, it's just really hard. So yeah, typically I'll get 2 or maybe 3 goes in. But you know, what's valid there is, hey, rather than do lower off, like if I do like my second go and I'm feeling like good, but I know I'm not going to send, rather than lower off, hang out and rest for 10 minutes on the bolt. And then instead of doing the route one more time, do that last bolt 5 more times. And it's the same amount of climbing, but I'm reinforcing all of that movement and all that. I really like that. I think that could be very good for me. And I'll let you know how it goes. I'm going to get out there probably next week. So
yeah, I'm excited to hear how it goes. Plus, whenever people watch you do that, people think you're really intense and smart and tactically good, or they think you're crazy. But I like to think that they think the other thing, that I'm a really motivated, insane rock climber. So you get those gnar points as well. And they're like, he's really getting pumped up there. Well, it's good and hard.
That's right. And I'll make sure I post it on Instagram so that everybody can troll me.
Perfect.
All right, let's talk about how we can take some of these concepts that you've shared here and how do we apply them more like in a general sense. So let's say we don't have the project identified, or there's a bunch of projects and I want to work on better movement, efficient movement. Some of the things that you were just talking about, you mentioned some drills as well. But for those who are listening, and also for me, like this spring and over the summer, there's a lot of things I want to go out and climb. And I want to try to flash some things and onsite some things and just climb some mid-12s and, you know, maybe take some trips. And so I don't have the thing in mind. And a lot of people don't always have the thing in mind. So what are some of your favorite ways to work on movement and to think about that when we're just kind of in a training or like general climbing mode rather than a projecting mode?
Ooh, okay. So honestly, those are kind of, the training mode is honestly the best time to decide to pick a movement focus and lean into it. So my biggest, like whenever I'm working with an athlete, I'm always trying, like I'll kind of like write this out and maybe I'll show them my bullet points, maybe I don't, but I will kind of have 2, maybe 3 movement priorities. Usually it'll be 1 or 2 general movement concepts that I want to work on with them. And then maybe it's 1 bonus skill that I feel like we need to add to the repertoire. So to give an example, I might say, okay, we need to work on body tension for sure, because as soon as we're doing a long dead point, or as soon as we're doing XYZ, or just in general, we just are a little loosey-goosey in the hips and we need to work on body tension, you know, that might be like focus number 1, right? And then maybe as a tangential skill, I might say, okay, and this person, I watch them climb things and I'm like, hey, did you see that heel hook? And they're like, no. And I'm like, we should work on that. Having heel hooks in the repertoire is a good thing. And that's just an example. Maybe it's, you know, something like that. So I think it's, if you're going to work on more efficient movement, don't, the biggest mistake I see people make is going, I'm going to become a better rock climber. I'm going to work on my technique. And then there's no additional thought after that. They're like, guess I'm just going to try to not climb bad. And then we don't actually get any deeper than that into it. So I think it's important. And I also think people get very, and I think, you know, if you're a self-coach climber, it's much easier to be like, I noticed that I don't like slab climbing. So I guess I'll climb more slabs, which is good. But part of it is like, what is it about slab climbing that feels hard to you? Because maybe if you're really good at overhung climbing, you really like using a lot of momentum. You like being able to jump and cut feet. And then when you have to move slow and find balance and learn to, you know, work with the holds and be patient, that's what's falling apart on your slab climbing. And that's actually more of an overarching issue than just the fact that slab feels hard. So I actually created a free course because it made me feel, I just felt like in the climbing world, there's a lot of people being like, don't forget to work on your technique. And then, you know, maybe there's, you can Google YouTube videos or you can find XYZ. But I think sometimes it's really hard to figure out, okay, if Lauren's telling me to have 2 to 3 bullet points of what to work on, but I don't even, well, a lot of people haven't even seen themselves rock climb or haven't even seen a video, or they maybe just have like a friend that's always like, wow, you sure do cut feet a lot. And then you're like, this is the feedback I have to go off of. And I just don't think that's always like very helpful. So I actually created a free movement course where I guide you through you getting videos of yourself rock climbing so that you actually have a little library of, you know, you climbing. And then I take you through, I kind of just like through, you know, my years of coaching and coach, like doing one-on-one training plans for like over 150 athletes. I was like, okay, I think I've identified like a few areas that are sort of the low hanging fruit that I see with everyone that I work on with people all the time. And then in my course, I take you through each module where I teach you a movement concept. And then I give you a little quiz on it for comprehension checking so that you actually learn something. And I also guide you through how to review your own movement videos so you can identify those things. So, you know, at the beginning of the course, you might go, I know my technique needs to be better, but I actually have no idea what parts to work on. And then at the end of the course, you're going to have a really solid, you know, concept on some important basics like hip position and the use of momentum and, you know, things like that and like accuracy and precision. And by the end, I take you through an exercise where I have you pick a handful of things and come out with a focus. So not that I can't try to guide a person listening to this podcast through that whole process, but I do think that this course is something that I like honestly kind of took over a year to get it all together and make it exactly what I want it to be. So it's a very beautiful free resource that I want everyone to use so that everyone becomes aware of these movement concepts, because I think it's just so helpful. So in a nutshell, big tip number one is like, go a step beyond, I need to climb better and actually have a focus, and then create a system where you're actually practicing that consistently is the big picture there.
Yeah, well, because you're right, it's a huge bucket and people just talk about like, oh, you know, technique and movement are these critical things, but then if you just leave it at that, you're
like, cool, I guess I'll just have the whole internet.
Exactly. I'll link to your resource, you know, in the show notes, and so people can go and check that out and do a deep dive. Have you, you know, having worked with as many athletes as you have, what are some commonalities that you've seen pop up that you work with athletes on? Are there certain types of movement or certain skills that kind of you see more often than not?
Okay, I feel like the big three that come to mind, okay, with an asterisk on four. Okay, four things that I see. One is just general accuracy and precision. And I think this is like a step one thing that you can work on. The way people readjust on holds and then place their foot like 18 times before they actually step on it and move. I just think that, and it's so funny because I don't know if Chris has ever mentioned this on the podcast, but like the one touch drill, I think every climbing coach has a version of this where you just try to touch a hold once and you don't readjust. It's so big. And I take like in-person movement coaching lessons with Nate Drolet for myself. Yeah. And I'm like, I have been doing the one touch drill for 7 years and I still readjust sometimes. It's a hard thing to train out of yourself. And just, you know, as soon as you get up onto higher skill climbing, it's still probably the readjusting on holds is still going to come up. And also when you watch pro climbers, like they're still readjusting on holds. And sometimes there's a difference between like purposeful readjusting and just like panic pretend fantasy land readjusting, where it's, yeah, you scooting your hand around 4 times, hold's not gonna change. You're just making yourself tired. Whereas there's a difference between, you know, reaching into a slot and then being like, I'm not all the way in the slot. Let me get all the way up in there. Right. So I think that there's a difference there. But I think that's a big one, is right. just like the way people are not as intentional as they could be with the way they place their hand and feet. Very big one. So just accuracy and precision. Huge thing. Second thing I notice is that a lot of people, and you know, there's like open hipped and closed hipped climbing. And a lot of people, I would say, largely speaking, fall into the, I always climb squared up and open hipped. And I think that makes sense because the way we like see boulders and routes in the gym, there aren't always, you know, it's kind of like a more advanced skill where you start having to like twist and start having to do drop knees and all of these things. But I think, and there's a difference between being closed hipped and like twisting a little bit and like fully twisting into the wall to get maximum reach. Because I think a lot of times we're like, oh yeah, I twisted my leg a little, so that counts. And it's no. You did not like, you almost want to be thinking like, I'm getting my whole, like the whole side of my body, like I'm going to touch my rib cage to the wall, kind of twisting into the wall is something that I don't necessarily see all the time. So I think just people climbing twistier and learning to do that is another big thing. And then the last one is...
And the benefit of that is that you're going to be able to reach further.
Yes.
And also, is it, it takes less energy to move as well than if you're squared up?
We need to have the option of being good at both, right? A lot of what building skill in climbing is me saying, hey, would you like to build a house with just a hammer? Or would you like four tools instead of just a hammer? And you'd be like, I will take the toolbox with four tools. Thank you so much. Just with the infinity different ways that footholds, handholds, et cetera, can be oriented, having the ability to alternate between open hipped and closed hip climbing can be really major. But to your point about reach too, if you're a shorter climber, you're really going to want to be good at twisting your hips in and getting as much length out of the side of your body as possible, because that's going to be major. Because if you're, you know, if you think about it, if your hips are pulled away from the wall and you have a 1 foot gap between your hips and the wall, that's like 1 foot plus, or maybe not. I don't know. I'm not doing triangle math on this podcast right now, but like you get the picture, like we're not doing geometry here, but like you get the picture, right? That's a big gap that your arms are now having to kind of like overcome. Whereas if you were fully twisted in and your like hip was to the side of the wall and your rib cage is on the wall, then you're getting that whole length out of the side of your body. And that's going to give you more reach too.
No, that makes perfect sense. I'm also, I think, going to name this episode Triangle Math. Triangle Math is just great.
Perfect.
In general. I think it's a great name.
My engineering degree is rolling in its grave. It's, oh my God, all you do, you took Calc 4 and now here we are saying the phrase Triangle Math on a climbing podcast.
This episode is brought to you by the Force Board. Are you guys into training your fingers? Dumb question. You're a climber. You're obviously obsessed with your finger strength. And let me tell you, the Force Board is just a huge step up from hangboarding. Now, if you're not familiar with what a force gauge is like this, it's a little digital device that you connect to your phone. And then as you pull on a block or a portable hangboard, it tells you exactly the force that you're using. So you don't need to mount a hangboard on a wall. You don't need to hang weights or pulleys to get the desired training stimulus. And then you can track your data seamlessly and program your workouts right in the app. And training fingers this way, instead of doing weighted hangs, reduces injury risk and also speeds up recovery between workouts. So I've been using one of these for months now. It is super portable, so I can easily bring it to the gym and to the crag for my warmups. And then I'm also using it to train up my endurance right now by doing 7-3 repeaters at 60% of my max, which is so easy, you guys, to program because the app just gives you a target to hit on each pull. And so as soon as I don't hit that target, I know that my session's done. Boom, that's it. I don't get injured. I don't get overly fatigued. I recover faster. With the Force Board, you can train anywhere. It is the future of finger training. Hit that link in your show notes or just pop over to thestruggleclimbingshow.com/Force Board and you can score 10% off your purchase by using code STRUGGLE at checkout. Okay, great. So we've talked about trying to minimize readjusting on holds, or at least eliminate kind of the unnecessary, superfluous readjusting on holds. We've talked about now climbing with a little bit more twistiness, mm-hmm. a little bit of triangle math here. What else are you seeing kind of as common technique or movement opportunities for a lot of climbers?
I think a lot of people don't use momentum enough. Because I think we all like make fun of the gym bro that like likes to campus the boulder or whatever. But I think people, it's kind of like what we talked about in the beginning. It's like people don't get the nuance of using momentum and that you can be using it on things where it's small holds, or you can be using it more on dead points, or are you actually driving from your hips in a lot of your moves or not? So I think just like the idea that momentum is a thing you can use on all terrain is something that people really miss. And I see it's so funny. And I kind of like had this struggle too. Like when I was working with Nate, we kind of realized, we were like, your momentum is a switch, not a dial. It was like, if I recognized a problem as having big moves or having something that needed like a big dead point or a big jump, I would be like a swingier climber. But then if I didn't feel like, you know, 10 out of 10 momentum was needed, I would just like drag everything out and make it slow. And now I've realized that momentum is a tool that you can use all over the place and it can save you a lot of energy. So I think that use of momentum is something. And I think people get good at it in the gym, but then when they go outside, it's like something you have to practice, because outside we're like, you know, especially if you're like on a tenuous boulder and you don't want to fall, like you're just more, I think, you know, in certain situations, more hesitant outside because that fear element comes in. And that's why you really need to shore up those momentum skills in the gym, so that when you get outside, your default mode doesn't full on shift back to, I'm scared, so I'll climb like a sloth all the way up this when I could just use a little momentum and save a ton of energy. So I think that's a big one too.
I love that. I think that when you see climbers like Chris Sharma, who just kind of like seems to carry one move to the next, and you know, these like very, very, it's got a very fluid look to it, right? And how do you like to train that, or how do you practice that when you're just like on a spray wall?
Ooh, okay, so one drill my athletes, if they're listening to this, are going to laugh. They'll be like, she's giving it to all of us. They're like, but it's so good. Shout out the Climb Strong drills manual again. I found this drill and I was like, this is great. We're all doing this. It's good. But it's called the hips first drill. And essentially what you're going to do is you're going to climb something, and it's easiest to start this doing more traverse type climbing, just because like traverses and like diagonal movements versus going straight up. But basically every move you do, and this isn't me saying you can't bend your arms, because I think when people are like, only climb with straight arms, and they tell that to newer climbers, I'm like, no, I hate that. I don't know. I don't think it's good advice. I think there's a better way to communicate the idea of driving from your legs. And that's this drill that I'm telling you about right now. But so essentially you're going to try to draw, your goal is to move hips. You're going to move your hips first. So instead of, and if you feel like you're like, I don't get it, the way you can kind of like check this is do the boulder first by trying to only move your arms first, like initiate every movement by being like, okay, my arm's going to move now, and then try to do the opposite. So then be like, okay, the movement's coming from my hips. And I tell my athletes to add a little bit of swing to it. Like you kind of want to think like I'm swinging my hips back a little bit and then I'm carrying them forward to the next part of the move. And that's going to help you move your hips first for a movement. Obviously, there's going to be some moves where it's like, no, this needs to come from your arms. Like my feet are on nothing. We are smearing. My arms have to move first, and that's fine. But this is a way to experiment with that sort of driving from your hips sensation. And I can send you my little link to that movement drill that I've made for my athletes too, so you can kind of get a feel for what I'm talking about, because visual explanations of movement drills are good too. But yeah, that's a big one that I love programming to help people understand momentum a little bit. And I think that's a drill that you can do no matter what grade of climbing you're at. So yeah, like I said, start it on more like vertical terrain with a lot of holds. If you have a spray wall that's like more vertical, that's going to be great. And then as you get better at it, you can start and traverse it more than try to go up and down. And then as you get better at it, you can start playing with more diagonals. You can start taking it to steeper terrain. You can start taking it to harder holds. So that's one that I really love for getting people to use more momentum.
Yeah, I really like that. You know, and I think to take that to kind of its extreme would be like pogoing. And you and Caitlin had like a fun, I think it was a snack break episode on pogoing, or it was on kind of momentum, I think, in general. But you talked a lot about pogoing, which is something that I don't really ever use. I probably would, maybe my relationship with the moon board would be a little less toxic if I did that a little bit more. But I like the idea of experimenting even on easier terrain with some of these more advanced type things like a pogo, or just like that hips first drill like you're talking about, because if nothing else, it's just going to start to familiarize the body with that kind of sensation and movement that maybe at some point in time I feel will be appropriate on a route that I'm working on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, that's how skills work, right? I think one of my favorite things as a coach is when an athlete, you know, it'll be like 6 weeks in and they'll be like, Lauren, I just did a toe hook. Like, I just did it. I didn't go, ah, damn, Lauren's right. making me do my toe hook drill. Now I got to find a toe hook and think about it and do all this. They're just like, I was just climbing and I was on a flash go and I just did it and it worked. And I'm like, that's the shit. Like, that's what's really cool. And that's what's frustrating and time consuming and all of these things about, you know, building new skills and learning to do different things. But, you know, if you're someone that always climbs squared up and then finally you're on, you know, you'll work on easier stuff. You'll maybe bring it to more moderate things. You'll have to think about it. It'll feel clunky. But then eventually, one day, you'll be on, you know, on a project and you'll be trying to figure out beta and you'll just do a really good drop knee. And then you'll come down and be like, holy shit, I just did the thing on something hard and it felt natural and the skill is acquired, right? So I think that's like one really fun thing about skill development and something that's so important to celebrate in climbing, because I think a lot of us don't even notice when those things are happening or we don't celebrate it enough. But, you know, sending things is cool, but skill acquisition is really cool too. And like building out that toolbox is really fun. And I think we all need to celebrate that more, because getting better at climbing really can be such a grind. So yeah, but I think that's like one of my favorite things. Like, I love when people send, but also when people are like, I get it now. I'm like, yes. You were like, this drill is hard and I am confused and my brain hurts. Yes. But now it's 8 weeks later and I'm like doing the thing and I'm like, hell yeah, that's what's up. So that's very fun and one of my favorite things for sure.
Well, I love that. I mean, thank you. You really do have quite a skill for distilling complicated climbing topics and concepts down to like easily understandable things, which is what you do very well in the podcast. But also, obviously, as a coach, it's what you've learned to do, is to work with clients in this way and make these big leaps more accessible in like a series of steps or breakthroughs. So thank you. I'm really psyched. Like, I'm excited to employ some of this just here on my little spray wall in my basement or at the gym here, but also to get back out to the red and start playing around with some of these. And I want to take some of the time, because we got to probably start to shift gears here, and I could talk about this forever. We'll have to, as I get a little bit further along in some of this, we'll have a reconnect. But we started with talking about how you're balancing skiing with climbing and climbing training right now. And when I let the patrons know that you were on the show, actually one of the questions that I got from one of the patrons, her name's Jessica, was about that very thing, which is about balancing kind of multi-sports and feeling like she's losing some of her climbing as she's focusing on snowboarding. She's a snowboarder, she said, and so she's focusing on snowboarding. She's feeling like she's losing her climbing, and sometimes she'll go out and snowboard all day, but then feel like she needs to get a workout in at night. And anyway, her question was essentially around like, how are you as somebody who's passionate about multiple sports as well, striking that balance?
Yes. Okay. No, I think it's the art of letting things slip is like almost what we're getting at here, which is great. And yeah, so to give people some background on me before I answer this very good question. So I love skiing. Part of the reason my husband and I moved to Salt Lake was so that we could ski more. So skiing is definitely, I always debate on which sport I love more. So love skiing, obviously love climbing. And then in the last couple of years, I accidentally acquired a third sport that I'm falling in love with, which is pole dancing. I hope my parents don't listen to this episode. They do not know I do this. So this is smart of me to talk about it here. But so I grew up dancing and I like was like, yeah, I don't know, Ryan, if you did any musicals. I know you have a strong acting background. But yeah, I was like a musical theater kid. I like danced, did, you know, 5 shows a year, like all the things. And I think part of me just really missed performing and having just like a different experience with a sport. But was at a friend's bachelorette party and we like, you know, did the dumb take a bachelorette party pole dance class. And I was like, wait a fucking second. I can combine my dance experience and enjoyment of performance with all this upper body strength to do like wild upside downy stuff. And also I always wanted to do gymnastics growing up, but I never had time. So now I feel like I'm getting to do handstandy flippy things that I always wanted to do. But all this to say, yeah, combining two such intense upper body sports plus skiing, yeah, it's a lot, but it's really fun. The other thing I will say is that I run my own business, which is a lot of work, and I do work like a debatably unacceptable number of hours a week, but I live somewhere where climbing and skiing are really accessible, and I don't have any kids. So, you know, that's part of it, is that my life is just somewhat flexible and I do have control over it. So I wanted to give that background before I'm like, no excuses. You can do 18 sports and
important content.
Work out 8 times a day and blah, blah, blah. Because that's, you know, maybe not realistic for some people. And I don't want to come across as, you know, being pedantic and being those influencers that are like, why can't you do everything and make perfect smoothies all the time? Because that's silly. But I do have some kind of like principles of being a multi-sport athlete that I for sure want to bring up to answer Jessica's question. Okay. First one is this idea that of consolidation of stressors. And this is the first year I would say that I've come up with, or I've experimented with this more. So basically, consolidation of stressors is this idea that if we're, it's almost like, it's kind of like a bodybuilding concept where, you know how like with bodybuilding workouts and like very hypertrophy focused training, people are going to do like leg day, and then there's like arm day, and then there's like chest day. You know, they break things up into these like days where they're stressing certain parts of their body. And with climbing and skiing, you can do that. So something I've experimented, you know, and you would maybe think from a logical perspective, you could be like, oh, well, if you made yourself tired from skiing, do an arm workout afterwards, or do an upper body focus strength session afterwards, because like you didn't, whatever. Or my friend, if we're consolidating stressors, I would actually tell you to do leg day afterwards, because then you're having a full day of taxing your legs, but your upper body's kind of fine and might be more okay for climbing the next day. So that's a concept I've been playing with more this season, and I've really liked how that works for me. So it's kind of like having, you know, if you're going to do like a ski day or like a running day, make it like a big day for that part of your body and maybe like pair up a few things. But then if you're going to have a climbing day, or for me, I will do these wild days where I will go like climbing, go to dance class, and then do strength work for upper body at the end. And am I tired as hell? Yeah. But like these big days help, because then I can kind of like group together certain training activities and then take like a massive, that's actually kind of what I did yesterday, you know, do big days where I consolidate my stressors and then take a big rest day after that. So that's one thing.
I like that.
Nutrition's like a separate sport when you're trying to do a bunch of sports. Like nutrition, if you're trying to do like 2 to 3 sports at one, be a, you know, multi-sport athlete, nutrition is your other sport. Like you cannot skimp on nutrition. Luckily, my podcast co-host and also one of my best friends is Caitlin, and we have an accountability call every Tuesday where we get together and hold each other accountable for business and training and nutrition. And I'm always
great.
Yeah. So that's very nice. And that's the other thing that I'm kind of lucky to have. But yeah, you need for sure to have your nutrition pretty dialed. Yeah. Ryan, before I go further, do you have any questions? I have one more thing I want to mention to answer this question. But
well, it's more, I mean, just a comment more than a question is, it seems so counterintuitive, but also it makes a lot of sense what you just said about grouping those days like that. If you do a hard skiing day, then do legs also like later that night, and then you can have like a fully rounded leg day. I would just, my assumption would be like, oh, you ski all day, well then come home and do a bunch of like upper body stuff, but then that ends up becoming a full body day,
and then you're like whole body's tired when you try to go climbing the next day.
No, I like that a lot. And I think that, yeah, I totally agree. Nutrition is just absolutely critical. And Caitlin's been on the show and she's wonderful. So I agree. She does fantastic work there. The only question that I had, and maybe this is what you're getting to, but like you started kind of into this section here as we're talking about multi-sport focuses and passions on saying it's okay to let things slide or slip. And so I do want to hear about your mentality on that and how you look at kind of different seasons of the year and you know, how, like what your climbing goals are like right now, or how that stacks up with what you're doing when you're out skiing.
Yeah.
But I'll let you finish, you know, the next.
Oh no, that's actually perfect. Cause that was the next thing. Look at you handing me that transition on a silver platter, like a professional. Okay, perfect. Yes. So the other big thing is you gotta have seasons for these things. I think becoming a planner is important if you want to care about if you want to like actually care about getting better at multiple sports, like you need to have a plan. And also, I think when you have a plan and you know what your priorities are for different parts of the year, you're going to feel so much less stressed out when you're like, you know, because I planned to focus on skiing and spend time on this. And like, basically what I've been doing in the winter is like, I'm on a climbing training plan, but I go skiing and I just know that I'm going to be a little tired and I'm going to have to be really on it with my nutrition and my recovery. And that's just what it is. And I still feel like I get a lot out of my climbing training, but I also know that my climbing training has to be like very well dialed and sensible and honoring the fact that I'm also like going to dance class and I am also going skiing. So that's a big thing, is like you need to be organized and you need to be clear on your priorities, right? So it's kind of like, I know that my priority is like go skiing when there's big storms, like do rowdy shit. But then also I know I like need to get my training done, but I'm not stressed out about rock climbing, like not feeling like the forefront of my universe right now, because I literally, well, I have a spreadsheet because of course I do. But like, I really do at the beginning of every year, I have an outline for kind of, you know, one or two bullet points for what's going on each month with my different sports. And then I kind of like plan like that. And on the Average Climber podcast, we actually have a very fun seasonality episode that you can go dig into if you would like, that like fully nerds out on this concept. But that's a big thing, is like have a plan for what you're doing for each part of the year so that you can have like, basically the way I do it is like, yeah, the winter I'm a skier and a rock climber who's training really hard and a person that's doing a shit ton of sports and is tired but is having a great time doing it. And then over the summer, I'm like, I am a rock climber and I'm still going to go to dance class, but like I'm not going to worry so much about like training my legs. And I also decided to run my first trail race this year just because, I don't know, I'm nuts. But like, so I'm going to like run a little bit over the summer, which is something I've never tried. And also, I think I've gotten to a place where I'm like, I am okay if certain goals in my climbing maybe don't come as fast as they would if I was only focused on climbing. But for me, it's like way better for my morale,
right,
to have multiple sports going on. And I also think as I transitioned my work from being like a corporate engineer to everything I do all day is rock climbing, and then rock climbing is my only sport, I don't know, I like to have a lot of things going on. So I think it's good for me to have multiple different sports for like morale purposes. Or like, for example, I had a little wrist injury that was an annoying like 6-week situation, but I was like, oh, well, it's ski season, so I'm going to rehab this. I'm going to do what I can with rock climbing and I'm going to go skiing. And it wasn't like a drama. So I think multi-sport athletes are badass. And I actually think it's really good for you. And I also think being an overall like well-rounded athlete is good for you mentally. And I also think, I don't know, I think it can mitigate injury. And I just think it's like fun and cool. But the biggest thing is, you doesn't mean you can't have goals, and doesn't mean you can't like want to progress in each thing. You just have to be organized about it and like realistic. And I don't think you have to, I used to feel like, oh, it's irresponsible that I have like other sports and this is so dumb and blah blah blah. But now I kind of feel that it's fun that I have other sports and I like it, and I don't view it as this like hindrance to my climbing. I view it as I get to do a bunch of cool shit, and isn't it fun that my body can do so many things, and that's a good time. And then I'm not, you know, if climbing doesn't go well or whatever, you know, or I don't send the thing, or, you know, there was like when I was down near you when I was like still in Ohio and we could have climbed together a bunch, I got a really bad cold, and then like rock climbing went down the toilet and I could like barely get down to the red. So I just think it's like nice to have multiple things going on, but you just have to be smart about it.
It's a little too healthy of a mindset, I feel like, for me. I like to pin all of my self-worth, my ego, and my time to climbing outcomes.
Let climbing become your whole personality. It'll be really fun.
If I don't send the force this spring, then the trolls on Instagram are going to shut down my entire existence as we know it.
I mean, listen, I feel that.
I'm okay with it. That's motivation.
I publicly failed for a third summer in a row to send a young girl, being once again 2 moves from the finish. I am not doing that this summer, and I'm picking more of a local project so that I don't have like a 5-hour commute each way, because that'll save me a lot of time and energy. But yeah, I don't know. I'm throwing my hat over the fence here on this podcast, but I'm going to try to run my first trail race. I'm having my best ski season yet. I think I'm going to try to do my first pole dance competition, and I think I'm going to send my first 513 in the same year, and it's going to be sick. So maybe this will blow up in my face, but I'm excited to try.
Hell yeah.
and I think it's going to be fine. And I'm going to have a lot of fun doing it. So yeah, that's kind of like, that's my attitude. If you want to be a multi-sport athlete, that's sick.
I love it.
If it feels like climbing isn't the priority sometimes, that's fine. And there's still like climbing. Okay. My other side rant before we wrap this up, my other side rant is that like with rock climbing, it's a beautiful sport because unlike marathon running, like even the most elite of rock climbers could still probably keep progressing if they were only training like 6 to 8 hours a week with very good focused sessions. So I also think climbing is kind of a good sport to have in the mix because if your training's really good, even though you're doing other stuff with your training, if you're like focused on your recovery and you're, you know, dedicated to like building up your capacity for a lot of training, I don't think it's really like that big of an issue. Like I've gotten better at climbing like plenty of winters in a row just by having like quality training while I am skiing at the same time. And I'm talking like one rest day a week. Also, like I'm in my 20s. So, you know, I know this can't last forever, but like, I don't think it has to be this like this drama that like if I like another sport, then my climbing's gonna implode.
No, I think it's really cool. I appreciate that perspective. And I love just kind of how you wrap that up there in that for most of us who don't have, you know, full-time careers as climbers, which is almost everyone on the face of this planet.
there's
so much that can be done in just a handful of hours each week. So yeah, thank you, Lauren. I really appreciate it. This has just been such a wonderful chat. We covered a lot and it's given me a lot to focus on and work on just here at the gym, but also as I get out. So I'll keep you posted. For people who are listening, who are psyched about all that you're saying and who would love to work with you, how can we get in touch with you?
Ooh, okay. So the easiest way to find all the things is my website that has everything you could want on it. So you can go to goodsprayclimbing.com and find me over there, and that's going to have all the stuff. I would say best ways to engage. Oh, and listen to the Average Climber podcast. If you like this, me and my friend Caitlin get mad goofy and educational so over good. There. So, and we have a really fun episode with Ryan on it too. So that's a good way to get introduced to our corner of chaos on the internet. Let's see. I would also for sure get on my newsletter. Every week I send out I alternate between two things. So every other week I do either an audience submitted movement review. So it's like people send me a boulder problem or a route, and I do a 5 to 10 minute breakdown of what's good, what I would fix. And I usually try to do some kind of, you know, like I did with Ryan right now. Tell me some things. Here are some applicable movement concepts that you can use. So I do that twice a month. And then twice a month, I take people's training plans and I give those a little makeover too. So I take what people are doing and then I just say, same thing. I get coach feedback on how people's training plans look. So those are very fun ways to get some free coaching and also just learn by example. So get on my newsletter to do that. And then if you want to work with me as an athlete, at the time this is being recorded, I'm looking to, oh man, reach out. I should have some spots opening up in April for one-on-one coaching. And then I'll be like opening spots for like April, May, June start dates. And you can learn more about working with me on my website. But if you liked what I have to say, if you're like, I would like someone to watch my videos and tell me what to do all the time, every week, that's what I'm doing for my athletes constantly. And it's very fun. So I'll write your program and then we'll be hanging out for 12 plus weeks. And, you know, helping you get better at climbing and helping you get your training done and having a lot of fun while we do it. Yeah, the Custom Plan Athlete group message, I don't want to brag, but it's very fun. We talk about fun podcasts. We laugh. We cry. We have a good time. It's very supportive. I love my Custom Plan group. Everyone absolutely rules. So, yeah, that's a lot of things. I've created a lot of shit since I started coaching. That's so great. So.
Well, it's all such good stuff. I'm a huge fan. I'm grateful for your time today. Thanks for giving me a little mini coaching session here. And I'm excited to report back on how it all goes. And good luck to you with all you have going on with the skiing, the pole dancing, the running, and the climbing. We'll do this again.
Yeah, you got to beat me. We're in a race, but we're in like a bad all race right. to 513 because we don't have same seasons we're working with. You're like, I am training in the summer, and I'm like, ah, yes, the rocks don't have snow on them anymore in the summer.
No, let's just both send this year, and then maybe I'll take up pole dancing.
Yeah,
and then we'll have a race to pole dancing comps as well.
That sounds really fun. It'll be a great time. There's shockingly, the competition is much less stiff for men. So weird. There's just less. I wonder why. Anywho.
Yeah. I can't lose if nobody else enters my category.
Yeah, for real. There you go.
And that wraps up this coach chat with Lauren Abernathy of Good Spray Coaching. And good spray, indeed it was. She is just equal parts insightful, stoked, and hilarious, which for my money is just the perfect combo when it comes to working with a coach. And speaking of which, you can work with Lauren if you'd like, from getting her free course on movement that she talked about earlier, to her newsletter, to one-on-one coaching. All of that info is in your show notes. Hey, if you'd like to see the uncut video of this chat and score instant access to more than 40 hours of bonus content, including bonus episodes with the likes of Adam Andra, Hazel Finlay, Alex Honnold, Chris Sharma, Allison Vest, Tom Randall, and so many more amazing athletes and coaches, you can get it all for about the price of a beer each month. And I'm telling you, I could really go for a beer right now. So if you are in a position to buy me one, that would be so rad. There's also a free trial happening right now, so you know, if you want to date me a little bit before you buy me that beer, I get it. And I'm just really grateful for your support as I grind away down here in my basement podcast / utility closet. You can swing on over to patreon.com/thestruggleclimbingshow to access that full library of bonus content. Or if you're an iPhone person, you can subscribe right there in your Apple Podcast player. Huge thanks and appreciation to our show sponsors who have brought you this episode at zero cost. Check your show notes for those links and special discounts that are only available to you, the Struggle listener. And by the way, you can see all of the show's partners and special deals by popping over to thestruggleclimbingshow.com/deals. Did you know that The Struggle is carbon neutral in partnership with the Honnold Foundation? Well, you do now. They are doing such amazing work, you guys, to bring clean energy to communities around the world. You can get all inspired by their latest grant recipients over at honnoldfoundation.org. And toss them some love if you can. They are doing such impactful, amazing work. And lastly, The Struggle is a proud member of the Plugtone Audio Collective, a diverse group of the best, most impactful podcasts in the outdoor industry. This show was produced and hosted by me, Ryan Devlin. All right, that clips the anchors on this episode. Thank you so, so much for tuning in. And if you liked it, and if this show in general just brings you some value and some joy, would you consider sharing it with your buddies, with your climb friends, your relationships, your gym crew, whatever, you know what I'm talking about. Just share it. The more who listen, the closer I will get to making this my full-time gig, which would just be so rad. Thank you, I love you. All right, I hope your training and climbing are going great, and I will see you next week.